Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Today, a special one-on-one with Dennis Quaid. Plus, Gordon Ramsay stops by to hang with the gang. And now, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. Our church, our mandate, get on and welcome. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. I'm excited to talk to Dennis and then Dennis and Mark today and Gordon Ramsay as well. So it's a packed show. I want to thank LifeLock. You can go to LifeLock.com, enter Adam, and Lowe's. Go to Lowe's.com/Adam. For this half of the show, Dennis Quaid, great to see you, my friend.
Great to see you, Adam.
We will talk about the album, Out of the Box, and we'll talk about the connection it has to me and No Safe Spaces and many more things. I must tell you that Breaking Away,
yes,
one of your earliest movies, inspired me really throughout my whole life, like in sort of bits and pieces. And it's one of those movies. I know people have those movies where everyone has their movie where they go, oh, you haven't seen this movie? You should see this movie. You know, like Runaway Train or something like that, where it's like it's a good movie that just people haven't seen. You haven't seen John Voight do that before and this, that, and the other. But Breaking Away is a great film. It's an inspiring film. A million years later, I made a boxing film called The Hammer, and the whole mantra the whole time is, this has got to be like Breaking Away.
It's an underdog film, and a local underdogs at that. First, it was directed by an Englishman.
Mm.
It was written by a first-generation Czech.
Really?
And it's this Midwestern American story, and I think that it's even better because of the people who made it. They have a better perspective on us, I think, at the time. And there's this charm that comes to it. And, you know, it's about these locals, that the local kids who are, you know, not receiving, not getting the benefit of these kids who come from the outside at IU. And they wound up on the cutters team. They're stone cutters, right?
It's
the quarry we use.
Yes.
But when we finished the movie afterwards and it came out, they added a cutter, really added a cutters team to that little 500, and have ever since.
Well, it's always been a great example that I've explained to people, which is like a sports movie doesn't need to culminate in the seventh game of the World Series.
Yeah, a sports movie should not be about the sport. It's got to be about something else.
Right.
It's got to be about second chances,
the
underdogs, or there's something else it's got to be about that's basic and universal.
This is this little bike race that takes place in University of Indiana, and it's nothing. It's nothing you've heard of. It's nothing anything except for you're on the edge of your seat the entire race because it means so much to the characters and you have so much invested. And I've always just thought about it, which is if you get to that point in the film and you don't care, then you failed us as filmmakers. When you get to that point in the film in Breaking Away, you care.
Yeah. Yeah, you really care. It was, you know, it was a fraternity race.
How did that come? That was pretty much your first big role?
That was my first big role. I'd done a couple of drive-in movies before that. In fact, I was actually already scheduled to do a Lee Majors movie about construction, high-rise construction. And I went in to see Peter Yates. And I was
$6 million man, by
yes,
the way.
That's right.
Married to Farrah Fawcett.
Yes. Yeah, boy.
Well.
And, but anyway, I told Peter Yates, you know, I'm already doing this movie. I'm sorry, I can't do the part. And he got in front of the door and said, you have to listen to me, young man. You need to do this film. And I credit Peter Yates with giving me a career, really. He taught not just that movie, but he taught all of us screen acting.
That movie is quietly – I say quietly because it's not going – he was the director. He was nominated. I'm reading the
he
screen
did Bullet.
Here. Oh, yeah, that's right. The Peter was also racing manager for Sterling Moss.
Yeah,
Jesus Christ, he's got a lot of range.
Yeah,
Sir Sterling Moss, one of the greatest Formula drivers ever. Okay, hold on a second. This movie, and we're going to go on to a thousand different subjects, but Breaking Away is quietly a super funny movie.
Yeah.
Lots of comedy in it.
Yeah.
All the stuff at home with Dooley and the cat and the
Paul
him
Dooley.
Thinking. Paul Dooley knocks it out of the goddamn ballpark.
Refund.
Refund. It's got
the way he takes his pen pack out when he's
when he was feeling amorous.
Randy.
So much there with the dad at home and the mom and the son who thinks he's Italian. So much comedy there.
And Danny Stern and Jackie O'Haley and Dennis Christopher and I. And we just had a reunion 2 years ago. And it was so fabulous.
So now, back to Lee Majors for a quick second. you riddle me this. Lee Majors is married to Farrah Fawcett. Right?
Let's go where we really want to go. Okay.
And he says, I'm going out of town for a little bit. Hey, buddy, Ryan O'Neill, keep an eye on my wife.
You're right. And this was at the time of, the poster, the famous poster of Farrah, too.
Ryan O'Neill, famous coxman, who, plays pretty fast and loose with his junk. And a pretty good-looking dude back in the day, especially. Yeah. Why, of all human beings, would you have that human being watch your beautiful wife while you go to Canada and shoot Killdozer 2?
He seemed very trustworthy. He looks very trustworthy.
I'm asking this.
He did Love Story. I mean, he's got to.
Dennis, here's my question to you: Is there was there an underlying thing where Lee Majors wanted out because Ryan O'Neill and Farrah Fawcett ended up becoming a couple immediately and just took off?
She transcended his career, eclipsed his career right after they got married. Remember there was this whole thing about when she got married, he wanted her to have his last name? And so as a compromise, she was Farrah Fawcett Majors.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you didn't go down that road, but you've dabbled with being married to a very famous woman who took whose career, shot through the roof.
And eclipsed mine, too.
Did it?
Oh, yeah. For when we started up, we're talking about Meg Ryan. When we started, I was the big somebody, and she was just starting out, really. And then that flipped. That flipped in the 90s. She did Harry Met Sally, and also I got off the cocaine and took a couple of years off and then came back. And, that's the thing about getting your life together. You think things are going to be better. They actually kind of get worse. But
you hear that, kids? Her career, do not ever get your life together.
Her career had really taken off, and we'd walk down the streets of New York and it'd be like, Meg! Meg! And, I thought I would never be that person, but I started to feel invisible.
Well, so you tell me because...
that's not why we broke up or anything, and,
No, but I'm interested. So my first thought is Lee Majors wanted out, so he had the guy who bangs everyone in Hollywood watch his wife, and then when he came back, they broke up and they took off together. I think you may not know it, but you want it.
But to Ryan's credit, and hers too, they wound up becoming lifelong friends / lovers /
let's drill down on this a little bit because I'm interested. I have the same relationship with my lover, Jimmy Kimmel. And this guy hosts the Oscars and does his late night shows and everything. And I'm nobody's happier for Jimmy than me. But there is a concept that I must be miserable. You see, and that's what
and that kind
bothers
of makes you
me.
Miserable, right?
Yeah, I am not miserable,
exactly,
but the concept where people go,
I was so happy for her as well, you know.
So,
but then it's just time and time and time again, and people.
So
look
when
at
people.
Me like,
yeah, they go, ooh, that's got to be rough on Dennis.
Yes.
And then you'd go, it's not rough. It's fine.
Yeah.
She's making money.
Yeah.
And then they go, I bet. Keep a good poker face. So it didn't really bother you, but it bothered you that people thought you were bothered.
Yes. That's basically it. And also to the point where I was a little bothered.
Right. And obviously then it's a chicken or the egg thing, because which came first? You being a little bothered or people just assuming you'd be
me
bothered?
Dealing with that thing I thought I would never be.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
right.
Being a human being, I actually had those feelings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it's not avoidable.
No.
But I guess there's a way to mitigate it a little bit. But you went out, so then you got off of cocaine.
Yes.
And you thought everything would improve.
Right. That was 1990.
And it didn't.
It just wasn't an instant answer to or solution to all my problems. I took a couple of years off. And if you take a year off even in show business.
Yes.
It's like an eternity.
It is. Look, it's funny. I tell people, think about all those people who are stars or hot or in your favorite sitcom and how hot they were at one point. And think about where they are now. Think of all those names. And then I realize I can't even think of their names.
Right.
That's how fast this thing turns over. And it creates a fear in those of us who are in show business to sort of keep peddling, a constant peddle, because it's no different in any form of show business. You take a while off of performing, doing stand-up, whatever, boom, it just kind of goes away. Like the crowd just
goes away.
There's
always somebody there to take your place on that.
Yeah, or maybe they didn't even take your place. Maybe they took everyone's place, or maybe you didn't even have a place. Whatever, there wasn't a place left. Who says you
I think you've hit the truth
who
there.
Who says you had
have a place to begin with?
So there's this sort of weird tension of sort of plate spinning, like that you don't really have in other jobs. Like, you have a job as a school teacher, you're going on your 17th year.
Yeah, but if you have a job at a corporation and, you take 3 months off to get your stuff together, you come back, they don't really like that too much.
Well, let me put this out there and you tell me what you think of this concept. I tell people all the time, when I was poor, I could look, and I was really poor, and I wanted a car, and a cool car, and I wanted to work on a house and have my own house and work on my own house instead of other people's houses. So I always had this thing where if I ever had money, then I would be happy. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you make money and you feel the same, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it that, in a way, with getting off of drugs? Like, if you're doing cocaine and you think, look, I got problems, but I got problems because I'm addicted to cocaine. Right. And then you go, if I could ever get off this stuff, these problems would go away.
Yeah.
And you do get off the stuff.
Yeah.
And you're still basically, the cocaine's gone, but the problems remain.
Yeah.
Is that a fair
statement?
Now you got to
really deal with your problems, because you use the cocaine to kind of really, in the end, first it's fun, then it's fun with problems, and then it's just problems. So you got these problems, and you're using the cocaine to sort of deal with your problems, and then you got off the cocaine, and now you've got to deal with the problems.
Right.
Right.
And you thought the problem
was
the cocaine.
That doesn't happen in a 1 week or, 1 week, 1 month or whatever. It was, over a period of years, really. It was kind of a grinding my teeth type of thing. To deal with a hole somewhere.
Where did you started out? Were you in Texas starting out?
I started out in college drama. I was 19 in Mr. Pickett's class there at the University of Houston, who my brother had gone to, and several other people who were in the business now. A really great acting teacher. And I was very lucky in my first week in his class. I knew what I wanted to do with my life. I wanted to be an actor.
Your dad was an electrician, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
How'd this
and
work?
Wannabe actor.
Oh, he was?
Yes.
Well, that's good,
sort of. And a crooner. And a piano player.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My mom sold real estate. She was a housewife, one of the first women, really, to be there in the job market in Texas, got out of the house as a housewife and to really start a career.
So it's kind of nice, because when you think electrician from Texas, you don't think of dad who's supportive to sons in the field of in the arts.
Yeah,
you feel like that's a blue collar, no bullshit guy is going to tell you to
He wanted to be that. There was this this legend in the family that when he was in San Francisco about to ship out during World War II. Two talent scouts approached him because they thought he looked like Dana Andrews and wanted him to screen test.
But wait, I don't know who Dana Andrews is.
He had to ship out.
Dana Andrews is of the Andrews brothers.
He was an actor.
Find Dana Andrews for
me. Dana Andrews.
Your dad's good-looking guy.
Yeah.
Oh, there he is.
He kind of looks like he kind of looks like that. Yeah, my dad kind of looked like that. That and Dean Martin put together, he kind of looked like.
Well, that's a good couple of guys to put in a Cuisinart and pour into a nice tall beaker.
I don't know if it was actually really true or not.
So you go into this early. You know what you want to do early.
Yes.
And your brother, Randy, wants to do it early, as early?
He was already doing it. And he was quite an inspiration, actually. When I was in high school, he was in University of Houston, and the Last Picture Show came through auditioning. He got it.
Right.
And then he got that. And then a year later, Peter Bogdanovich, the director of the show, called him and brought him out to Hollywood to do What's Up, Doc? With Ryan O'Neill.
Wow. And, by the way, Bogdanovich is not the guy you want watching your wife either when you go to Canada to shoot
a TV movie.
So you don't want you certainly don't want O'Neill and Bogdanovich watching your wife at the same time.
What a tangled web we weave.
Anyway, very
inspirational to me, Randy. Also, I want to be a musician. I've been playing music since I was 12. And I had, during that first week of college, I had gone over to audition at a local, what we called coffee houses back then. I don't know if you remember that, but that was where we sang our protest songs of the 70s at the time. And I auditioned for the lady over there who told me that what you have is good for like living rooms, but I don't think you'll ever make it. So I went out to my 1970 Gremlin outside, threw my guitar in there, and I went, I guess it's acting.
Mm-hmm. So it's always been music and acting.
But I had to focus on one to begin with.
And it must have been, as you stated, probably pretty.
Because Mr. Pickett was there to actually teach me a craft.
Right.
That was what was so great about his class. He actually made it real for me.
The over 60 starring roles, I'm just looking down on my notes here, The Right Stuff, The Big Easy, Traffic, Frequency, The Rookie, and then, of course, Breaking Away. Mm. Everyone loves The Right Stuff.
That's my favorite movie of mine.
It's great, and my plan or point in life is not to tell people stuff they already know. Everyone listening knows The Right Stuff, has seen The Right Stuff, and loves The Right Stuff. They may not know Breaking Away.
Right.
So I look at it as my job of not saying Breaking Away is better. It's you know about one, you haven't seen the other.
I don't judge my movies necessarily on how good they are, even though both of those movies are really great. But I judge them on the time, how good a time I had on them.
Mm-hmm.
And The Right Stuff was far and above the most incredible time I ever had on a movie set.
Just because of all the weightlessness and the water tanks.
I'm from Houston, which was Space City.
Houston.
I wanted to be an astronaut. Was a kid. Gordo Cooper was my favorite astronaut. I got my pilot's license on that film. I fly jets now. Chuck Yeager, legendary fighter pilot, was on the set every day.
Yeah.
It took 9 months to shoot. We were shooting at Edwards Air Force Base.
It was a dream.
Amazing, amazing time.
Yeah, Chuck Yeager. I mean, people don't realize, man, test pilot back in the day meant test goddamn pilot. His plan, first off, nobody knew what would happen when we broke the sound barrier.
Yeah.
We didn't know if whatever you were in would just disintegrate.
You would vaporize,
too. We didn't know what really would happen.
Yeah.
And that guy just got in a rocket that was lowered from like a B-28. I mean, that was hairy, crazy, nutty stuff.
Yeah.
Like, get down into this thing that's in the belly of this plane, fire up the rockets, have it release, and you go break the sound barrier. That sounded like, I mean, that was more stuntman than test pilot.
Yeah,
in its own
weird
way. Yeah,
it was also back in the day, you know, where he
no
got
computers.
Out a little can of paint and painted glamorous Glennis, his wife, you know,
right.
on the front of the plane, and
right.
you know, and you know, closed the door with a broomstick handle that he'd fashioned, and you know, went up there with a broken rib. You know, things weren't so monitored back then.
No, it was also back when you like if you were. I don't know, shelling one of the islands or dropping, you know, you could write, I hope this bomb goes up your ass, Adolf, and then you could put it on there, and now you'd be thrown in the brig for that,
yeah.
which is insane, because, like, you know, my feeling is if you're going to go out there and risk your life for this country,
right.
take your chalk and write whatever the fuck you want
yeah,
on your
exactly.
bomb.
You
I'll
know,
give you that leeway.
You got feelings, too, you know?
And also, you're bombing... Dresden.
Mm-hmm.
Does it really matter what's written on the bomb?
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about
true.
Hurt feelings.
That's, yeah, that was, you're referring to Dresden, which was the single biggest bombing, really, even more than the atomic bomb killed people in World War II, correct?
I am.
Yes.
And we are. The album, once again, is called Out of the Box, and it's by Dennis Quaid and the Sharks, and it's available now on Spotify and iTunes. And
yeah.
Dennis, you do the guitar, and you do the keyboards.
A little bit,
and
yes.
you do the singing.
And I wrote the songs.
And
except for the covers.
It's featured in my movie, which is coming up. I'm looking at Mark, who's going to come in. Oh, he left. We're coming out in March of, do we know? We're keeping our fingers crossed
for
March.
Your film is coming in March, right?
March of 2019. Yeah. Lots of good, interesting names in this film, and I'll keep you guys posted, but Dennis was kind enough to lend us a song for the movie. So
seems to fit.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
We'll hear a little about that coming up. We'll hear a snippet of the song. So for you are in now what place in your life?
I think I'm at the, I can say I think I'm at the happiest point in my life right now. Knock on wood.
Why?
But, well, I am more tolerant of everybody, especially myself. And, you know, I've lived with things and I kind of take things when they come. And I have more fire in my belly for what I do, both music and acting and just life in general, than I did it in my 20s.
Well, do you
feel... And I think it's because I appreciate it more.
You know, I was, had a chance this year to talk to Stallone a couple of times and he seemed to be... almost in a hurry. You know, he's telling me about all the projects he's working mm-hmm. on and, you know, picture Sly Stallone and how many plates he's spinning simultaneously. Mm. And I started to kind of get the picture that he felt like he had to make hay while the sun was shining and the
That's
sun was starting
exactly
to
the
set
phrase
a little
that
bit.
I think everybody over 60 uses. In fact, well, you get to 60 and it's, there's a little bit of a freak out, and then the next day it's fine. But you realize that there is less to come than has gone before. And then also you're looking at your parents.
Right.
Who are, you know, who you basically are their parent in some ways and taking care of them. You realize that your life really is short. Let's get out there and enjoy it.
Right.
Yeah.
But also there's a sense as an artist, I don't know how you feel, but something like music or something like The Right Stuff or Breaking the Ways is a legacy, right? I mean, it's just you. It's
yeah.
always going to be you.
It's me frozen in time. And then, yeah.
Right.
The,
and that's that.
Yeah.
And I think there's an element, I guess in the past that came in the form of having kids, you know, like here's a piece of me. I'm I'm leaving behind. And, yeah. and it still does, but there's also an element of feeling like I want to leave this body of work. Is there that feeling?
No.
Don't have that
no,
feeling?
No, I really don't have that feeling. No, I still feel like I'm working on it.
You don't have...
I really am... I'm so lucky, and I've had the lucky life. I'm so thankful for the career that I have had, looking back on it. I'm looking ahead at tomorrow.
Is you have twins, right?
Yeah, 11-year-old twins, boy, girl.
Right, so I have 12-year-old twins, boy, girl. It's crazy. I don't know how your kids are, but when I see my kids, it's crazy that we try to peddle this sort of gender shit all the time, like society's imposing, blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
My kids are wildly different
than
one another.
Oh,
it has nothing
completely.
To do with the
Absolutely,
environment.
Completely.
It's everything to do with them.
Yeah.
It's weird when you I don't know if you found this, but having boy-girl twins actually lets you study men and women kind of growing up, especially simultaneously. Now, when they're spread out a little bit, you can go, well, he's in high school and she's in grade school. So, but when they all come up the exact same way and you see how insanely different they are, and then you turn on MSNBC and they're starting to talk about genders just being something, a myth that's imposed by society. And paternal or it's fraternal, you know, man, whatever. And you go, you realize it's all bullshit,
well,
right?
The stereotypes and the cliches are true. Are true because
they're
true.
Well, they exist because they're true.
Yeah, in general. Yes, they do. Boys and girls, they emotionally meet different places at different times along the way.
Right.
They're attracted to different things. Girls, their emotional intelligence is up there. They know how to – their language skills, their small motor skills, I think is the biggest thing. Physically, the small motor skills of girls is just better to begin with.
Well, it's certainly better earlier.
My
daughter was much more coordinated in her balance and things like that.
Yeah.
Were much better.
Let's say like 4 or 5 years old when they're still learning. And then boys like catch up and, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
But also.
And girls catch up in certain other ways and the like too.
I've also noticed there's a strong emotional part and emotional manipulation part that my daughter has with my wife that my son doesn't have.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
She's just there pushing buttons and pulling strings.
Boys are more direct.
No, my son is like, if he's tired, he's tired. If he's hungry, he's hungry. Mm-hmm. If he wants to go basketball, he wants to go play basketball. But there's not a kind of a maneuvering that's going on.
My son has learned how to use his sister to ask for something that they both want.
Really? Yeah. So they're both...
Her negotiating skills.
insanely different.
She'll wear you down, man.
Oh, I got to tell you, too. The thing is I'm sure it comes around. I hope it comes around. But I mean, my daughter, it's funny. They kind of have a mad scientist sort of thing, like, which is like they're super bright. But they're also a little bit evil. So you got to watch them. I don't mean evil like bad person. I just mean like Dr. No or something. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, he wasn't evil, was he?
Well, what I'm saying is he's not going to come up and punch you in the face in the street.
Yeah, he said it in a nice way. Well, good day, Mr. Bond.
I said good day. Now I'm going to pet my Persian cat over here.
Ajab. Well, take care of it.
Yeah, but you could have a beer with him.
Yes.
He wouldn't try to cut you or anything.
Right.
And I'm trying to figure out whose sons and daughters are further apart, your twins or my twins. Now, I'll give you an example, and you tell me. When my son was 4 or 5, we went to some Feast of San Gennaro thing over behind Kimmel's Theater and blah, blah, blah. And the way the car was positioned, he just had to get in to the back of the car. And he had to just sit in his sister's car seat which was like the pink car seat.
Oh, yeah.
And he had the blue car seat because that's the one he wanted.
Right.
And when we told him, look, just get in and sit in her car seat, he pitched a fit.
Right.
Because he didn't want to sit in the pink car seat.
Right.
Later on, because they're the same age, but she's ahead of him, she stops wetting the bed 6 months before he does, or maybe a year. We're all out of his pull-ups with, Speed McNasty for cars on it.
Yeah,
so we got to use the princess pull-ups, and he's pitching another fit.
I don't blame him. I ain't putting on no princess.
All right, I'm with you, but
pull-up.
That was him at a very early age. And there was no one ever told him, princesses are for girls or no, they're not for boys or whatever. That's just his hard wiring.
They learned that on TV, man.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, they learned that stories on TV. Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And then there'd be some like toy that was exactly alike. Say, it's a like a soft guy, mm-hmm. A penguin soft guy. And they look exactly alike. Only one might have a slight difference to it. Might be a little bit more oval than the other one. And so that becomes the fight.
Right.
Who's getting the oval penguin?
And
it goes on forever.
Are you guys all, is everybody in town? I know this is, these kids are with your ex-wife, right?
No, we switch off. 50-50.
Custody. 50-50. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everything's copacetic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everything's co-everything.
And you're here, you're on the west side somewhere?
Yes.
And everyone's on the west side somewhere. And are you, I guess, now you're also doing a movie. You're doing Reagan, and that was produced by Mark. Who'll be in a minute. How was it playing Ronald Reagan?
Well, we'll find out in next year.
2020.
Yeah. Now, what, 2020 would be the perfect time for it to come out.
Did you study? I mean, how does it work? How do you prepare for something like
that? Well, I haven't gotten into my deep preparation for Reagan yet because I'm doing another thing with Billy Bob Thornton right now, Goliath. But for one thing, he was my favorite president of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
There was something about him that was just dad,
right?
I think, to everybody, good or bad, in the sense of the way that you looked at dad back then. But he is the president. He won the Cold War.
Yeah, well,
was the hugest thing of the 20th century.
He is. It's funny because I'm a little bit younger than you, and I grew up in a time when, and I grew up out here, and I grew up with people that would like anything that was American, you sort of had to hate. Like Mr.
Right.
Rogers, the Boy Scouts,
right.
Ronald Reagan, screw all those guys.
And back during the 70s, that was a huge thing, especially after Watergate. There was zero trust in the government.
But we're going to
Democrats or Republicans.
But not only the government, any established anything.
Yes.
Fuck the Boy Scouts and fuck Sears.
Yeah, and
like
Americans overseas, they're all loud and
right.
Crude.
Or it's just ugly Americans.
Yeah, Vietnam was also in the 70s.
So,
that, our standing in the world was just.
And Ronald Reagan was sort of
diminished.
A poster child for sort of patriotism and, it's America's dad and whatever it is. And so I remember going, oh, fuck that old guy. But then as you hear some of his speeches now and you realize, if you think about him and you think about the Cold War, you realize that there is only one truth and one sort of effective modality in this world, meaning a football coach that's tough and drills everybody and runs everyone and tells them to do push-ups and run, jingle jangles and two-a-days and blah, blah, blah. That is the only road to having a successful football team. It just is. And the only road to taking the Soviet Union and basically stopping them from blowing up the world is explaining to them that we will destroy them. There is no reasoning. There's no bargaining. There's no any.
Before, Jimmy Carter had given away the B-1 bomber, and our military was way down, and the Soviets built up during that period, and you know, as far as negotiating. And then when Reagan got in there, I mean, you'll notice, for one, the Iran hostages were out the very day he was inaugurated, and he was a cold warrior. He was a hawk, I think they understood that he is with strength. To speak to strength.
Yeah, well, look at it. You know, the Berlin Wall was up for 30 years or more. And then he just basically went, Mr. Gorbachev, take down this wall, tear down this wall.
Yeah.
And I remember everybody on my mom's side of the family, and I grew up in L.A., you know, everyone going like, oh, my God, I can't believe he said that.
Right.
Oh, like, he's way out of line.
That was just never going to happen.
First off, I love it when people sit in an air-conditioned house and take offense to a guy wanting to tear down a wall with a whole bunch of oppressed people in East Berlin.
Right.
Like, you're offended by this?
Yeah.
Well, how about you go to fucking East Berlin and enjoy yourself?
Yeah.
And then see if you're offended by it. It's easy to be offended. You live in Sherman Oaks.
I was actually there helping tear down the wall. Meg and I were in New York, and we heard it was coming down. It was such a huge thing for our lives that we took a plane to Berlin and gone out there with sledgehammers, and it was
really
the biggest party. It was fantastic,
and people are like, "Look at Meg Ryan
feeling.
And her helper tearing this wall down."
Right. I was holding her purse while she swung the sledgehammer. Yes,
so you physically went down there.
Yeah, it was really it meant that much to us.
The Berlin Wall, Max Zapata, was up from the early 60s, later 50s, or something like that.
1960, 61.
It didn't go up immediately after World War II.
No.
And then it made it for like a good 25, 28 years or something, you tell me.
61 to 89.
Mm-hmm. And so almost 30 years. How long after that speech did it come down?
Well,
and how dare everyone criticize him for making a speech where you
walked? 87 or 88. But Reagan did not even talk to the Soviets for 6 years.
But it goes – I think there's many parallels in today's world of politics, which is somebody says – you're pressing these people, take down this wall, and a whole group of people say, how dare you make that statement, which is pretty self-evident to me. Like, that's not inflammatory. And the wall, here's the deal. If somebody does something wrong, like puts up a wall, and you say, take it down, you're not the bad one. The person who put the wall up is the bad one. We're kind of losing. We've always had difficulty figuring that one out. This notion of somebody does something wrong, and then you say, oh, that person needs to be punished, and then they go, oh, you're being so harsh.
Yeah, it's sort of like if you say the same thing long enough that eventually people will start to take it as truth. And the Soviets always had the same line, the same line, the same line, the same line. Reagan came along, and basically what he realized, I think, is that the USSR was a paper tiger, and their economy was nowhere near us. And he made them spend money. He started Star Wars, which was really – it didn't exist. But he forced them to spend so much on their military and then, you know, Afghanistan that they eventually – could not keep up. Then you started to have Poland, I think, is where it really first started with Lech Walesa.
He
had then spread to another Soviet satellite. And then
he did what Muhammad Ali did to George Foreman.
Exactly.
He did the rope-a-dope, and they punched themselves out.
Mm-hmm. And he also Ali got there a month before and got everybody on his side.
Oh, right, right, yeah.
So by the time that George Foreman arrived, they were going, boom-ba-ya, Ali, boom-ba, you know, kill him, kill him.
We should do a podcast. We talk.
You and I, we should.
Dennis Quaid and Am Carolla talk random history. Yeah, Ali got to Africa a month before and basically a politician got everybody on his side.
Yeah, he did he would run 4 miles every day, and he'd run through all the poor streets of of the city.
Yep.
And, you know, the kids would follow him. And by the time it, you know, George Foreman arrived, it was done.
It's funny. George Foreman had about the same trajectory Don King, which is they were bad dudes early on in life and then realized they'd make a lot more money if they smiled and ate cheeseburgers.
Well, George Foreman, he was just a kid. He was from the Fifth Ward in Houston. You know, it was his way out of poverty, and he had destroyed everybody. You know, Joe Frazier, Kenny Norton. I mean, everybody was like, you'd see them in midair with one of his punches.
And well,
Ali, there was no way that he was going to beat George Foreman.
Well, it was kind of an equation that every human being does, which is Ali fights Joe Frazier and almost dies and get his jaw broken and gets dropped by Joe Frazier and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Has the hardest time ever with Joe Frazier, and I think lost to Joe Frazier one of the fights.
The first fight.
George Foreman goes in there and throws Joe Frazier around like a rag doll.
Yeah.
Like literally knocked him down five times.
Yeah, it was the third round. He was gone.
And so it's like, all right, I'm doing the math here. They have a common opponent.
Mm-hmm.
One guy destroyed him. The other guy got his jaw broke by the opponent. So who's going to win when those two guys come together?
Ali got in his head.
That's the beauty of sports.
That's the beautiful thing he did. He got in his head.
All right, let me tell you something beautiful about LifeLock. Oh, holiday season, man. You're out there. You got the public Wi-Fi. Just because it's free doesn't mean it's secure. Also, hackers can create their own rogue hotspots with similar sounding network names and access the information sent and received over the network. You got to protect yourself. It's almost 2019, people. With a lot of personal exposure these days, doing all your shopping online, making travel arrangements online. The holidays, the cyber criminals kick in. Good thing LifeLock Identity Theft Protection has the power of Norton Security to help protect against threats to your identity and your devices. It is the best. We all have it here. Let's not go. Oh, yeah, smart. Dennis has it. Let's get some LifeLock. Right, Dawson?
Of course, no one can prevent all identity theft or cybercrime or monitor transactions at all businesses. But no matter the season, LifeLock with Norton Security is the right choice to help look out for threats you might miss on your own. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code Adam for an extra 15% off your first year. That's promo code Adam for an extra 15% off at LifeLock.com.
All right.
Fast talking, slow walking, boo.
Let's take a quickie break, and we'll bring producer Mark in, and Mark can join us, and we can talk about projects with you and projects with me and maybe our future podcast as well. We'll take a quick break. Producer Mark Joseph in right after this.
Hi, I'm Greg the Drunk Elf here to give you a few tips on how to get through the holidays, but first, a little about me. I used to work in the North Pole, but was terminated by that fat for what Elf Resources called excessive consumption of peppermint schnapps on the manufacturing line. Also sexual harassment. That jolly didn't even have the balls to fire me like a man. He had his lover Craig fire me. That's right, kids. Santa's been cheating on the missus with Craig. Anyways, all this is beside the point because regardless of why I was terminated, my tenure at Santa's slave operation did give me a few insights into how to get through the holidays. Number one, tell your kids to stop writing Santa Claus. He's not reading the letters. He's doing lines off them with Craig. And number two, head to Corolla Drinks to get the deal of a lifetime on some of the best booze that have ever touched the lips of this elf named Greg. For only $99, you can get a six-pack of Mangria Plus, a signed holiday card by the Ace Man himself. A true Christmas miracle of a deal. Hurry! The deal only lasts a week. Mahalo, motherfuckers.
Head to CorollaDrinks.com and use promo code ELF to get this offer for only $99.
Point of view. don't matter if you're suffering a broken heart. Don't just sit around watching your life fall apart. Think out of the box.
There you go. It will be featured on No Safe Spaces, coming out hopefully, I think, around March, right? 2019, Mark Joseph?
Knock on wood.
Let's talk about the process. Dennis Quaid is with us. Out of the box. Dennis Quaid and the Sharks, by the way, available on Spotify and iTunes. So, Mark, your background, producer, born in Japan, spends a lot of time in Japan.
Gee, wow.
What
the crack research team here.
I love Japan because I don't picture any gum on the sidewalk. But am I right?
That is true. You're thinking of Singapore, but Japan, they're very, very clean.
Well, you get caned in Singapore if you throw your gum on the sidewalk. Yeah, right. So, although it does remove the gum from the sidewalk, it enter cane, remove gum. That's but true. I like it when you do it on your own,
right?
Versus being, you know, worried about
cultural
the rod.
Yeah,
the rod, yeah, is where they would tell you what not to spare.
Curtis,
they're very nice people, and when they get drunk, they thank America for conquering them. I mean,
really?
That happened so many times. Thank you, America. Thank you, General MacArthur. This is all because of you. When they're drunk.
Interesting. I just like the part where after their soccer team loses, they clean up their portion of the stadium before they leave. I just go, that's a culture I'm down with.
Yep.
But you, so all right, let's talk about this journey. You think about No Safe Spaces. You get hold of me and Prager at some point, Dennis Prager, the other Dennis. How does this work?
You know, we talked to Tim Allen originally about this idea. You know Tim, a good friend, mutual friend, and somehow he said we got him to be in the movie. Remember, he came into that comedy special with you, but we just thought this fit you and Dennis Prager better because you're coming from different perspectives. I think of Dennis as being Dennis Prager as being very, very political. And I don't think of you in a political way. I think you're a practical, common sense kind of person. And so we thought, what if these two came together? And the idea that what's happening on college campuses is going to spread – it's already spreading big time.
Sure.
I think most Americans sort of disengage from college campuses. They don't know what's going on. It's all crazy. Let's just forget about it. They'll work itself out. Those kids will eventually get a job and a minivan and get back to normal. But that's not what's happening now. It's actually spreading like a virus to off campuses.
Well, why shouldn't it? I mean, I don't mean I welcome it, but I'm saying – do the math. You go somewhere. There's a mindset at this place you go to.
Thought police.
Yeah, but you know, I've sort of tried to look at everything from a sort of causational standpoint, which is where if you're a young person, you know, you do grade school, you do junior high, you do high school, and then you go off to college. The adults who inhabit those worlds are there to impart information and ideas and thoughts to you, and you're there to absorb them. Now, theoretically, we're going to talk about algebra and history, but what if all those adults were vegan and vegetarian? How long before they started going, well, let me tell you about the history of this country. Meat is murder, and they slaughtered the buffaloes, and they shouldn't have been eating them. They should have been eating plant-based products. Anyway, how long before the kids start getting a fucking solid dose of vegan and vegetarian thinking with the history and with the whatever subject? Mm. Well, it has to happen. You imagine going, oh, there's a bunch of vegetarians and vegans, and they're just going to teach your kids. They'll teach them math and history and algebra and PE and stuff, woodshop, whatever. But don't worry. None of the vegan or vegetarian stuff will ever bleed in. It'll never make it in. Well, that's insane because human beings aren't wired that way. Right. They're wired to start spreading their message in. So when your kid then comes back to visit you from college and you go, hey, we're doing meatloaf tonight. Why are we surprised when the kid stands back and goes, hey, Dad, meat is murder?
Yeah, it's a moral issue all of a sudden, right?
It's a moral issue, and it could go no other way. Now, the reason it can't go any other way is who's attracted to these jobs? This is essentially, like, everyone hates me, but I hate all the teachers are heroes thing because I went all the way through. All I was warehouse. I had like two good teachers and 47 horrible teachers. And it's a kind of a weird sort of socialism that's going on there. Like you don't have to work too much. You're going to get long breaks around Christmas. You don't have to work. The summer, you get 3 months off. You get paid. You get paid no matter what you do. And you'll be fine. You can retire at 55 and continue to get paid. Well, that's going to attract a certain type of person, and they're not going to have the entrepreneurial spirit. They're going to go, I'm going to come over here.
It's job security.
And then what are they going to start preaching along with the veganism? Right. That's what you're dealing with. So when your kids get done with 13 years of that, well, could you expect anything different when they come out of the other side of that crazy maze hedge of all thinking the same and all being wired the same? When they pop out the other side, of course they're all going to feel the same way.
Totally. And you have kids coming up. I have twins as well who just started college, by the way. And you know, at our house, they come home, I come home and I watch CNN, Fox, MSNBC every single night. Like my kids have been trained. We watch all the different channels. We get the news from a totally different perspective. And then we think, like, what is true, what isn't? Not just watching one side or the other. And that's what's happening on college campuses, just getting a steady diet of one side's views. And that's what's going to kill us, unless we stop it.
I had a young man come work for me for a little bit, and 19, 20 years old. And at some point when he was resigning, he explained that he didn't feel like this place was safe, essentially, like not a good place. This is editing documentaries about race cars.
He
did not feel that it was the right place for a young man to be.
Right.
And I realized, oh yeah, this is part of us now. I don't think it's – now here's my thing. My thing is if people say, oh, hey, old hard-ass rich white guy, what you coming down on everyone for? Oh, it's not about me. I'm taken care of. I worry about him. He's going to have a tough time.
Right.
I'm fine. I got shit, and I work hard, and I understand everything. These guys don't. And this notion that you're somehow, oh, you're being the bully, going back to Reagan, like tear down this wall. Hey, whoa, what have you been such an asshole? Like, well, it's for them. It's not for him.
Yeah.
What's he care? What do I care? I'm telling you how to succeed, not because I'm an asshole. I'm telling you, you're going to go through your whole life, and if you go through it soft as a victim, good luck.
No, you know, you talked about my growing up overseas, and one of the benefits of that is you see America in a totally different way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at America from a foreign country, and you see all this freedom we have, the freedom to say whatever you want traditionally. You look around the rest of the world. We'll have this map in the movie, by the way, Adam. We'll have pictures of different countries. You can't say this in this country. You can't talk about this idea in this country. And this today, like in Europe, in Canada, even in Japan, like you don't want to criticize, you know, certain parts of the emperor's thing. China. This is today, and we take it so for granted. And these snot-nosed kids who are marching or whatever, they have no idea. They're living in a – they grew up in a candy store and don't realize it's a candy store.
Yes. Obviously, it makes you feel like you're taking crazy pills. And all you can think to do is – I never went to college, but I've never really been a big fan of college unless you have something really specific that you need to learn. And I've always – I'd love to throw my kids on a construction site, tell them to get to work when they're out of high school for a year so they can kind of learn how life works, because construction sites, the military, making the football team, they're all little microcosms of like just how life works. Like you start off cleaning up garbage and digging ditches. You work your way up to apprentice. There's all these different trades. They have to sort of enter at the same time. You can't close up the walls before the electricians come in. So the drywallers have to come in after the electricians are done roughing in whatever. It's this weird dance of, and everyone has to kind of get along, otherwise it's not gonna work. And then there's a general who's like a foreman who has to schedule everyone and everything and keep all the parts moving. And then there's all the unexpected, like, oh, it rained for a week straight and we couldn't pour the concrete. You know, now how do we deal with that? I wish more people were interested in that part of life, that that nuts and bolts kind of part of life. And we're getting further and further away and more into this weird digital sort of avatar world and less into this tactile world. And I think our kids are going to suffer.
Yeah.
You mean it, learning to get along with everybody and different points of view and appreciating everybody else's work.
Well,
when we grew up, there were three television channels.
Right.
You know, NBC, ABC, CBS. I think CBS was probably maybe the most liberal, but it really wasn't that. ABC probably the most conservative, and then NBC was sort of in between. And you used to have conservative Democrats, liberal Republicans, but they weren't too far away on the issues, and they didn't just say no just to say no about things. And there was more of a dialogue.
I was going to just jump in and plug the movie for a second, Mark, talking about different points of view. Name some of the people that are in this movie, because I think when you hear who's in this movie, you're going to see a rainbow spectrum of opinions that couldn't possibly get more diverse.
Yeah. You know, I mean, look at Van Jones. Van Jones will tell you he's to the left of whoever, Ho Chi Minh, Cornel West, Alan Dershowitz. I mean, these are our strong, really progressive voices. And they're in the movie going, look, at, we're not down with this. We believe in free speech. We really believe in free speech. In fact, Van Jones sat in this very chair and told you how much he believes in free speech. On the other side, we follow Ben Shapiro and Ann Coulter up to Berkeley as Ann Coulter gets shut down. And Shapiro has 600 grand of security to protect his little speech. I mean, it's a great scene. He's got his yarmulke on in the airport, and there's all these troops amassing up there. It's so ridiculous. But we wanted to form a consensus for this movie. This is not a right-wing, a left-wing movie. This is a movie saying, this is America, guys. We fought a revolution for this stuff, and we're throwing it away. We're throwing it out the window for no good reason.
Well, my general sort of hard-ass, atheist, basic approach to all this is we started listening to the kids, and we started deciding that they knew what was best. And then the Dr. Drew always just calls it sort of political expediency, like just fucking that kid's 16 and he wants to shut down the NRA. And so then all the politicians started falling in line. Like, these kids know more. They have more wisdom in their little pinky than we have in all of Congress. They're like, really? This guy's a snot-nosed 17-year-old, doesn't know shit from Shinola. And by the way, I didn't know shit from Shinola either. And my kids are 12 and they don't know shit from Shinola. I'm certainly not listening to the wisdom of a young child, but we decided it was all youth. These guys had a message and we needed to listen to that message. And not only do we need to listen, we need to start tweaking ourselves. Like, we were essentially baby Gap, and we need to start having the apparel that the kids wanted. So we started changing our inventory because these guys are our customers. I don't look at 19-year-olds or 13-year-olds as my customer. I look at them as little shits who should shut up and listen to me. And don't worry, one day they'll get a chance to be my age, and there'll be some other 14-year-old that can tell us shut up.
Well, you made this point in D.C. Remember, we went to D.C. To have you testify before Congress. That's my favorite scene in the movie. I have to tell, you know, your listeners.
I'm laughing because it's the furthest thing away from me when I was on a construction site.
But so I'm backstage in Congress, at Congress. And here's Shapiro showing up with his, you know, 14-page single-spaced, you know, speech, and he's reading it really fast and everything. And Adam is in the green room with a yellow legal pad, just scratching up a couple of things. And that's the speech you gave about, can adults be adults? Is it too much to ask? If you're a college administrator, could you just act like an adult?
Right.
And when the kids flood your office and demand some crazy stuff, just say, you know, go back to class or else.
Well, you're the adult, and the kids used to be students, and now they're clients.
Customers. Right.
And you do things for clients and customers that you would not do for a student or a ward or someone you were supposed to protect. So there's a difference, and they have assumed this position, and it is not helping. It's basically you saying, I'm I'm a babysitter, and I got Dennis's twins, and I got Corolla's twins, and I got Joseph's twins. And then the babysitter shows up, and we go, look, we're going out for the night. Just take care of them, make sure they eat healthy, watch a little TV, and go to bed by 10. And then the babysitter shows up, and the kids say, we want to eat jelly beans, and we want to stay up till 3 a.m., and we want to watch bootleg porn on the internet. And the babysitter goes, all right, well, let's take a vote. You know, and everyone's hand goes up, and they go, all right, fine. I guess the ayes have it. Go ahead. Far be it from me to tell you what to do. I mean, look, that's what you guys want to do. It can't be wrong, right? Well, the babysitter has a job, and that job is saying, no jelly beans. You're going to have yourself some protein, and you're going to have some vegetables. And if you're nice and you finish everything, you have a couple of jelly beans. And maybe you can stay up till 10:30, but we're not going to bed till 4 a.m. And that's their job. But at some point, they figured out I'd be a much more popular babysitter, and I wouldn't have to argue with these kids. And I wouldn't my job would be a lot easier if I just let them eat jelly beans and stay up as late as they wanted. And that's what it's kind of folded into.
I think you hit the nail on the head right there. that wanting to be liked and wanting to be liked by the world and do the right thing and have it be nice and warm and fuzzy. And it's just not that way.
And also in life, you know, it was kind of funny. Not funny, haha, but it was interesting. Dr. Drew was sitting where you're sitting, Mark, and he was talking about some cause or some racial thing, you know, Black Lives Matters or whatever it was, and a progressive cause, a feel-good kind of progressive, good vibe cause. And Drew's pretty down the middle, probably leans a little more conservative. It's weird. I feel sort of defensive about it, my own self, which is I'm not conservative. My thoughts are just basically like a nutritionist saying diet and exercise. And then you go, hey, man, what the fuck? I don't want to go run and eat kelp. And you're like, well, you want to lose weight? I'm telling you how to lose weight. It's like, whoa, what's with all that? Why are you harsh in my mouth? Like, I'm just telling you the truth. I've never changed my story, which is, don't have kids if you can't afford your kids. Don't stay in school, get educated, get married, have kids, don't have more kids than you can support. I've been saying that for 20 years on the radio. No one said anything about it because it was no duh. It was, of course, don't have. Now it's become some sort of politicized. Everything, of course, has become politicized. And I've become conservative for saying diet and exercise. Which is a weird thing, and I've always known it. I've always been down the middle with it. I've always said, if you want to grow a pot plant, you own the property, and it's your house, and you're not selling it at a schoolyard, then grow a pot plant next to your Roma tomatoes and enjoy it in your own home. Like that's the way I've been with everything. But anyway, Drew was sitting there where you're sitting, and he said, you know, I did kind of get down with this one sort of Black Lives Matter cause or something like that. And he said, man, it felt good. Like people were praising me and people were clapping and I was getting some cool tweets. And it's like, I get it. I get the allure of that sort of virtue signaling thing, that thing where Cecil the Lion gets shot and then you got to take to Twitter saying what a horrible outrage this is and blah, blah, blah. And then people float a little love your way. He said, I feel it. Like I get it. And it's an easy temptation. It's much more difficult to sort of stand your ground and get a bunch of people calling you racist, bigoted, homophobic, or, you know, whatever, whatever that is. And I think the Ben Shapiro's of the world and the Dennis Prager's of the world just don't care. Or they care, but not enough to change their view. But a lot of other people are going, it's so much nicer just being over here and getting all the praise.
Yeah. Yeah. And people just have lost their minds. My kids used to ask me when they were young, Daddy, what are we? Are we conservative, liberal? I said, you know what? We're anti-stupid. What is true often works. Often does. Not always, but often works. And what isn't doesn't work. And you guys were talking earlier about roles and genders. And, you know, I had the same thing with my kids. I had five girls and then a boy. The girls were not interested in balls whatsoever. The boy, anything round that moves, he is obsessed with it. I didn't create that. That's the way they were created. And there's an obsession with trying to change all that stuff. And I just wanted to say that, you know, the reason that Dennis and I talked about this movie and this song, I just feel like Dennis is coming from that same place that you and I are. I don't even know what his politics are, to be honest with you. And I don't care. But he has those same values. You talked in the movie about you and Dennis share values. And that's why when we talked about this movie and this song, I told him what we were doing. And I don't know if you wrote the song for it, but it was right about the same time you were writing the song. And I just thought, man, these lyrics, this is exactly what this movie is about. So I'm so thankful that he came on board.
That was funny. I was thinking back when you were talking about addressing Congress and Ben Shapiro. He's such an A-plus student.
Right.
And I'm such a D-minus student. Right. And we're both smart, but he's an A student and I'm a D student. And I literally mean an A and a D student. And we both approached addressing Congress from our A student, D student exactly process, which is I so flew great. In like late, the you know, before. Wednesday night, right. went to
Waking
bed
at prayer.
1:30, got up at 6:30, had still not had any consider. Like, I remember thinking, well, it's a 5-hour flight. I'll work it out on the flight. Had a couple of drinks and fell asleep on the flight. Did nothing. Right. Like, I was right back in high school. Like, there's an oral report due money. Yeah, I got this. I right. got it. And then I found myself writing down a couple of beats on a steno pad.
In the green room.
In the green room. And then I looked at Shapiro and he had like, yeah, tight space, right. 5 pages right. that he would have put it in a teleprompter if he could have. And I was like, oh my God. And then I think he went before me and he just reeled it off.
Right.
Like he didn't hiccup. He didn't inhale. He didn't pause. He just, and I was like, oh shit, I got to go after. I got to do my oral presentation after the A student, after Doogie Howser completes his. I gotta go. I just remember sitting there thinking that. But it is.
It's the highlight of the movie. And then it gets set up by you on Kimmel. And Kimmel says, now, have you been called to Congress? Are you in trouble?
Yeah.
It was a great
it always
moment.
Made me. Well, you know, if you're a betting man, right. you would assume that was the issue. Let me tell you quickly about Craftsman. Ah, Lowe's is a new home for Craftsman, including their new V20 cordless power tool lineup. Oh, I love me some Craftsman. I've always used their hand tools, especially over the years. But now they got all kinds of battery-operated ones. One battery system works a multiple products and 2, 4, 6, 8 tool combo kits available with the 2-amp high-capacity lithium batteries. It works with all tools in their V20 lineup. Runtime, you get plenty of runtime. You get the power you deserve. You get the V20 brushless tools, and they're available in a brushless drill and impact driver. I used to do earthquake rehab work. Cannot drill masonry unless you have an impact driver, people. Actually, unless you have a hammer drill. Impact driver, actually better for driving screws. Proudly made in the U.S. of A with global materials in Charlotte, North Carolina. For the latest Craftsman product updates, visit Lowe's.com/Adam. That is Lowe's.com/Adam. So how did the movie – I mean, this is a loaded question, but – Mark, this movie was, I guess, sort of a journey for you because we didn't have a script or anything.
Right.
We're just going to kind of move forward. Like, we
yeah.
got the general gestalt of the film.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, you and Dennis are going to speak over here. All right, we'll put a film crew there. Oh, we're going to Congress. All right, we'll film that. Did it come out in the shape that you'd envisioned?
No. Docs are really different. And we call these docudramas, right, because they're different from the stuff you watch on the History Channel when you can't sleep. But they're very different. A script like with Reagan, we have a script, we follow the script, we move forward. But these kind of move and groove and morph. And halfway through this process, we realize this is not about college campuses. This is really about the society at large. And so we had to pivot. And then if you remember in the middle of this, Dennis was suing Google and YouTube because they were demonetizing his videos. Okay, now,
right.
now we're on a bigger stage where that same ethos – that was censoring people on college campuses is now at Google, frankly.
Can you explain that for a moment? And I'm a fan of Dennis. And Dennis does PragerU videos, and I've done three or four of them. And they are 5 minutes. They're rated G, not PG, just G. There is no foul language. There is no subject matter that's taboo, unless you want to politicize it. But they're basically just talking about subjects in history and things of that nature. And usually it's a bunch of men and women in their 50s and 60s wearing blouses and ties with their hair parted, standing there and delivering this message. The notion that you would need to pull one of these off of the internet because of content is absurd unless you just disagreed with what the premise was.
Right.
There is no material that's offensive. You can be offended by the idea, which you shouldn't be allowed to do because that's their idea and you have your ideas and we don't pull your ideas down. We do if you put certain language or certain visuals in them, but these don't contain any of that.
Right.
And he had many of his videos pulled. Is there any explanation for that other than that world leans hard to the left?
Well, I just heard the case in November, for instance. There's this group. I forget what their name is, but it's some kind of a group of people that say they've moved. They're no longer gay, right? They've whatever they happened. They got married. They had six kids, whatever it was. This group's videos have been taken off of Vimeo, for instance.
Right.
Because apparently it's a hurtful concept to tell a person that you can no longer be gay and you can move on with your life and do other things and go straight. Well, you know, I understand swearing. I understand pornography, nudity. I get it. But the idea, that idea is offensive? Like if you told me,
No ideas. I mean, really, you save a few insanely, you know, everyone should have sex with their kids immediately. Like that's a bad idea. But there are only a few ideas that are really bad. Most of the ideas are just your idea versus my idea or your opinion versus my opinion, which is sort of what this country is about. So the notion that it be flagged because it was an idea is insane. And yes.
Well, let's take the song, Baby, It's Cold Outside. That's the most recent thing that I can't wrap my mind around. It's a song which is a dance of romance, the girls that came over to the guy's apartment, and it's Christmas. I think it was written in the 40s. There's nothing really offensive said in it.
No.
There's these – yeah, but – she's got to go, and he wants her to stay.
Well, I think that's a biological fact, and it's insane. Also, it would suggest we don't have real problems, which we do. Like, we got a lot of homeless people, a lot of junkies, a lot of unemployment, a lot of spousal abuse.
And people want this banned now. They want the song banned.
I have a theory. And also, here's a very dangerous thought. The dangerous thought is that song could affect my son or my daughter in some negative way. It can't. And if they grew up thinking it could, I would try to cleanse their mind of that notion. Because this notion of, okay, there's a group of people who are formerly gay and they're not anymore, that threatens me. That's not a good thought. Your thought should be, if I'm gay, my thought about that should be, well, that's their path. That's, I guess, what they did. That's not the same for me and my gay partner. And moving on.
Right.
And Baby, It's Cold Outside is a Christmas song that has lyrics in it where a guy wants a gal to stay with him because he's amorous and she's worried about her reputation. That has nothing to do with my son or my daughter. It shall not affect their actions. It's not like my son's going to hear that song three times and go, I'm going to roofie the next bitch I meet. It will have no effect. And the notion that you're saying that it does have an effect is a dangerous effect.
Right. But look, you live this out in your own life. You were a big fan of Religion on the Line. You listened to all these Christian talk radio stations. And you're an atheist or an agnostic, depending on the day. I'm thinking agnostic.
Everyone's trying to upgrade me to agnostic.
But anyway, you listen. You expose yourself to this stuff, right?
Absolutely.
You don't live in a bubble of your world. And again, we take this for granted. In the Middle East, a lot of countries, proselytizing is illegal. It's against the law to convert from one religion to another. And we take this for granted in America that it's not – you can do whatever you want. And so in the case of Prager's videos, they flag them, right, as some kind of offensive thing, and then they demonetize them so they can't make any money. And they're basically shutting down businesses.
Who – this notion of I disagree with this person – they should never be able to work again, is, first off, the most grandiose slash evil thought on the fucking planet. Like, this person said something I don't agree with, they'll no longer be able to support their family.
Right.
Take it all away. That's insane, number one. Number two, who is getting these things flagged? Is it a Southern Poverty Law Center that's doing it, or is it actual Google that's doing it?
I think it's a combination of groups that monitor hate content and maybe users themselves. They flag it.
Chris Luxemana, find five of the most innocuous Dennis Prager and PragerU videos that have been flagged, and then everyone will laugh their ass off. And then you'll see what we're talking about. But sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's pervasive. And so back to the movie, in the middle of this movie, as we're filming, this happens. So like, wow, we got to really deal with this. This is not exactly college campuses. So the movie got bigger as we went along. It moved from, and you remember, you'd go on tour. We were speaking on college campuses. And then Charlottesville happened, if you remember that. Mm-hmm. It's like, whoa. We don't want something like that to happen. So, again, we got to retool. So it definitely – these kinds of movies, you don't follow a script. The script follows you.
Well, I've made a few documentaries, and I wholeheartedly agree. And I'm excited to see it for the first time coming up a little bit later today. Did you find any of those, Chris?
I'm pulling them up right now.
I will tell you guys one more time that you can check out the album Out of the Box by Dennis Quaid and the Sharks, available on Spotify and iTunes as well. And the documentary No Safe Spaces will keep you up to date on that, but should be coming out around March 2019, yes?
Yeah, we like to put these, you know, we make these for theaters. We have to really make this a theatrical experience. You know, this isn't the one you watch because you can't sleep at 3 a.m. So that takes a lot of work. We still have some work to do. We're going to watch the first cut today. But it has to be, I'm going to pay $12 to go watch this, not I can't sleep and what's on TV.
Agreed. Yes?
All right, so these are some of the PragerU videos that YouTube censored. Why America Must Lead was the right title.
There you go.
Everyone should stand for the national anthem. Is fascism right or left?
Delivered by like Professor Johnson or something.
A naked woman or something.
Yes.
Yeah. What's wrong with e-cigarettes?
So hateful.
Yeah.
So hateful.
Can I just say something about Dennis to my right here? I am blown away. You're 64, right, Dennis?
Yes.
I mean, 64 years old, your first record.
Yes.
You know, if this isn't a lesson for all of us, I used to think that Reagan was amazing because he became president at 69. But here's 64-year-old Dennis Quaid, and so impressed with the record. And thank you for giving us the song for the movie.
Glad to, and hope it fits in as well.
I love that, and I the one thing I do really like in terms of where we're heading as a society, and when we talk about all the things that scare us and all the kids and the campuses and everything, the one part that I do like about the sort of youthful movement is when I was a kid, you know, I'm 54, Dennis, 64. Mark, I'm not sure.
50.
There's like, all right, well, it's time to start thinking about retiring. Right. You know, it's like old man Carolla over there has got to start winding it down.
To do. Right.
Said 30 years at the Postal Sorting Center over there in Upland,
watch.
And it's time to start wrapping it up. And I'm like, I feel like, oh, I'm just getting started. I got so much stuff I want to do. And that is, in terms of a snapshot of where we are right now, that is a great thing that people are creating and getting outside of their comfort zone and dropping albums and making movies and doing stuff that, you know, I wrote my first book when I was 44, you know, I made my first doc at 50, you know, like this stuff didn't really exist in the past. If you're going to write a book, you wrote a book when you were 25 or you made a doc when you were 28, but not, it's all this stuff just keeps, it's endless possibilities.
Mm, yeah.
It's nice.
Well, yeah, talk about that. I mean, you're.
Well, I think Henry Miller actually didn't start writing until he was 40.
Oh.
Yeah.
Thanks for shitting on that point. You picked the one fucking guy. But
just
start.
Like you had to follow. You have to follow your bliss. You had to follow the thing that you know makes you burn and want to do. And you know, I feel like I have a lot to say.
Well, also,
I just want to keep going. It keeps me going.
It's kind of a weird sort of be careful what you wish for, because all the guys I meet, my stepdad worked at Lockheed for 30 years, electronics engineer. Skunk Works, blah, blah, blah. Fireman. When you meet a fireman, you talk to that guy, he'll go, well, when I'm 52, I'll have 30 years in and I can retire full benefits, full pay and whatever. And it's like, we've done this. We hung this carrot out in front of these guys. My stepdad, same way over at Lockheed. It's like, I'll have 30 years in when I'm 60. And so I can get full. And so there's this finish line and they're looking at it. You know, and they're going, okay, when I get to 52, I can just stay home, get the checks will come to me. I won't have to. We don't really have that luxury in our business. There is no finish line. There's just what's next. And it's kind of a be careful what you wish for. This is a sort of theme that I think about a lot, which is I'm glad someone didn't have a thing where I go, hey, man, this time next year, I'll be able to just punch out. I'll be walking around my underpants.
Well, Screen Actors Guild, you do have a pension plan, you know, that you do start receiving that you've been paying in, but it doesn't mean you have to quit.
Yeah, and it's probably doesn't pay as much as being a successful actor. All right.
That's true.
Dennis Quaid, I want to thank you for coming in, and Mark Joseph as well. And again, we'll keep you guys posted on everything. Dennis, come back and pay us a visit sooner than later.
Adam, I really enjoyed it.
Gordon Ramsay, who is a very interesting cat, came in a little earlier in the week, and we pre-recorded a sit-down with him. So just so you guys aren't jostled, Brian and Gina are in with Gordon Ramsay because we nailed it a little earlier in the week. So enjoy Gordon Ramsay and the gang.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla.
Hey, it's Eric Stromer.
Hey, it's kind of my thing.
Hey, I'm going to... All right, sorry. Hi, I'm Eric Stromer.
Let's not live in the past. You should listen to Ace on the House because me and Stromer dispense building advice every Saturday on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts.
I might even go as far as to say professional building advice.
Hey, get me some coffee.
There you go. Here I go. I'm running.
Ace on the House, every Saturday on Corolla Digital. Download now at adamcarolla.com, the Podcast One app, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Ace on the House.